What's up and welcome to another episode of the Scott and Ian Show on the SBL podcast. Today, an incredible treat. We're going to play the Rob Malarkey and Richard Spavin talk show episode that Scott and I and the team from SBL filmed down in London a number of months ago, and it is incredible. Even if I do say so myself, like I was there in the room and it was incredible. Hey, Rob Malarkey, most known for playing bass with Jacob Collier, but also involved in this beat music scene in London. Incredible bass player, incredible sound maker, communicator, educator. He is the real deal. Like this well-rounded musician, we're going to get to hear from him today. Also, Richard Spavin, one of the authoritative voices in beat music, in Dillafield, drunk, wonky time, whatever you want to call it. He is on Kit and he's talking all about that. And I think I got on his last nerve. I just wanted him to drill down and explain every single thing that he was doing. So it's so fun. They play these tunes and then Scott and I get to ask questions. And I am so fascinated by that like Detroit Soulquarian Jay Dilla thing and how you would even approach that on drums, how then you would approach it on the bass. And we get to ask all of these questions. Oh, and Rob goes through all of his pedals and talks about playing like octave bass and where to put pocket when you're playing like that drunk Jay Dilla style of playing bass against the drums. It's amazing. It's so much fun. So we're going to get there. Let me tell you what's going on at SBL this week. We have a brand new course that came out yesterday, May 31st, Soloing Concepts of John Patitucci, the legend, the man, the myth. You want to know what makes John Patitucci solo so compelling? Check out this course. It's only at SBL. It came out yesterday. We also have a mentor session coming up with one of my favorite humans in the world. Monday, June 5th. I'm going to be hanging out in the comments. I'm going to be hanging out in the chat. Jonathan Marin. And he's also talking about soloing, the why and the how of bass solos. You guys, this is why SBL is so great. You're going to have two people, a course on soloing from Patitucci, and then a live seminar that you can actually interact, ask real-time questions with Marin, with Jonathan Marin. It's all happening this week. It's at SBL. What are you doing? Have you taken the free 14-day trial? What are you doing? Check that trial out. What else we got? We have the Slap Accelerator enrollment that opened this week. If you want to learn how to slap or learn how to slap better, learn how to double thumb, learn how to open hammer thumb pluck, this is the accelerator for you. I believe it's $197. If you're not a member, if you are a member, you get a $50 discount. And I think we're even rolling out an all access pass for all the accelerators coming up soon. If that's not happening already, I think it's coming soon. You get all the accelerators for one price, one low, low price. Also, we've got a funk challenge lasting to the end of June at the campus, in the campus on SBL. Super fun community, supportive. You pick a funky tune, you upload it, you get feedback, you see what other people are doing. It's super encouraging. No one teases you. It's not the shark-infested waters of YouTube or social media. It's a super safe place to learn and grow. That is all at SBL this week. Please get involved. It's such a great place to be. Okay, that's enough of me. Let's get to this interview with the great Rob Malarkey and Richard Spavin. You're about to get an inside look at one of London's greatest rhythm sections. Richard Spavin on the drums and Rob Malarkey on the bass. Scott and I sit down with these legends as they demonstrate three tunes and break down exactly what they're doing. We talk about drum and bass, Jay Dilla grooves playing behind the beat, what a drummer is actually looking for from a bass player, and Rob's amazing pedal board and sounds. And make sure to watch to the end of the video to see if this incredible rhythm section sticks together or falls apart in our infamous string change challenge. If you enjoy this type of content, please consider liking the video and subscribing to the channel so we can bring you more of it. Let's get into it.
Oh my God, I have so many questions. First of all, it's so fun to see this up close. You know? Yeah. Like, I've never been this close to this kind of music, or like a rhythm section playing drum and bass. Yeah, no, I've never been like 3 feet away. And so many things struck me as I was like seeing the interaction this close. And the first thing that struck me, and what I'd love to ask you about, is it seems like there's this almost role reversal in this dynamic where, whereas like in funk music, maybe a bass is doing a repeated ostinato, yeah, holding it down to a certain degree, right? But in this, you're the ostinato, right? You're playing patterns,
yeah,
that are all completely locked in. There's this evenness in syncopation, evenness even in velocity. Right.
Or in jazz, actually, is maybe even a better example, isn't it?
You know,
you'd be playing, bass player's literally holding it down.
Right.
The rule is that you play four beats to the bar, and then the drummer's like dropping the bombs and
yes,
in the crazy stuff. Yeah, you're right. It's a reversal on that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good point.
And it frees you up then to be in melody zone.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you're doubling that melody.
Yep.
Then you're also playing in that end piece, you're improvising with effects, right? You're turning on a synth pedal. Mm-hmm. Love to talk about this whammy thing that you're doing, but you're not playing the repeated pattern.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, or I'm playing around a repeat, but yeah, I see what you mean. That's the beat, and that's the repeat thing. But yeah, I'm playing around that. I mean, I always have this, I have a philosophy that this is a melody instrument. Mm-hmm. Anyway, mm-hmm. We're usually playing one note at a time, but sometimes the melody's at the bottom.
Right.
Right. And I try and think melodically all the time. So I try and hear ahead what I'm going to play. You know, you have this kind of strange thing where you can imagine into the future what the melody is going to be that you're singing. I'm really fascinated by this idea, actually. But and then you can just apply it to bass line. So, sorry, jumping into some
territory. No, I love
here,
that. What are you like listening forward in your mind?
Exactly,
like,
yeah.
You're like trying to imagine what it's going to sound like for the listener.
Yeah.
Ahead of time.
Yeah, I mean, I've put a lot of work into just sort of singing through my instrument, do you know what I mean? So I make the connection so that I can hear a thing and my fingers will do it. You know, that's like the big goal for me.
Right, freedom.
That I'm always working towards, yeah, like... If I can think of great melodies here, then I can hopefully recreate them on there.
It doesn't sound like, for me, like I've listened to you a lot, right? And so I like, obviously listened to you there, but I've just listened to you a lot, like over the years. And I'm, every time I listen to you, I'm like, huh, doesn't play any of the sort of like bass stuff that like so many of the players play. Like I listen to one guy and I'm like, oh yeah, well he plays that too. But when you play, it's like you have almost like a different approach to organizing, like to melody, to your point, to melody, but just it almost like, are you thinking about keys? I mean like keys. Are you a keys player?
Right. Yeah,
do you think about keys as you're playing?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a background of, I play a bit of piano. That's been really helpful for just like understanding harmony and you know, getting away from the scalic thing maybe is what is the common thread. People who play a fretboard, very often they just played scales, you know, and you hear them playing consecutive, like
pentatonic
adjacent
shapes.
It's all just always adjacent notes, and I really tried to get away from that. But I guess not thinking so much about scales, but just what the harmony is and trying.
Tell us a secret, Rob.
Are
you thinking more sort of like chords?
Yeah, trying to highlight the harmony. Yeah, and that's always more melodic as well because you get these big jumps. You know, you're jumping between these chord tones, and it's always going to sound a bit more like a melody.
In that situation, are you consciously, and maybe not now because you've been doing it for a long time, right? But have you consciously in the past thought, I don't want to sound like a bass in this scenario. I want to sound like something else.
No, I think I respect my role as a bass player. You know, I'm trying to do everything. I'm trying to keep everyone happy and.
Yeah.
I think that's a good thing about playing other instruments a little bit. You get a better idea of what people want to hear, you know.
Yeah.
I've got pretty good idea what Rich wants to hear.
Rich, what do you want?
What do you want out of a bass player? Like, especially in this, like, drum and bass style. Like if you can speak to this scenario, what do you want?
This is a good example because it can very easily be wrong. You know what I mean?
Sure.
If the bass player gets involved with, you know, you get all the subdivisions basically as the drummer in this. And that's where it comes from, is like the records, the original cut up samples and everything. Drums is all subdivisions. I mean, bass a lot of the time is just languid, legato, and really that's about, you know, this is not normally the scenario sitting in armchairs when it's where
bass. It's not. It's like, it should be.
Like bass bins and just try, like, pleasing the audience in that way. Mm. Like, it's about the drop, you know, when the sub comes, it's like everyone just floats in the air, you know, and you feel it in your chest, and it's a club feeling, you know. If the bass player is going to get involved in all the subdivisions on something like this, then instantly the genre has gone down the toilet, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you just have a load of fusion that's not going to make sense, like, from
in that setting,
of, from the influences that you're sort of, you know, that's because that's what I've come up on. It's like,
it's true. Yeah, you've got to think about the culture of it and where this music works, you know.
Yeah.
And there's an agreement between the two of you, right? You're trusting that you are not going to dig into the syncopation too hard.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. It's best, it just works best if I leave a lot of space. On this kind of beat, leaving some space, I mean, I probably could have left a bit more space.
No, man, no, it's only great. But you're also not, like, laying out where the one is either. You're not sort of like, meh.
No.
Matt,
you know, actually, yeah, I was just thinking, if we were playing this in a big, through a big system or something, I'd probably play a lot less, actually.
Got it.
Yeah.
I would love to ask you too, Rich, could you break down that beat, that main beat where you're crossing?
The one where I'm going like this?
Yes, please.
Yeah.
Well, what I do, I just go like this.
And it all just happens. I would love, like, if you would play that beat and if you could slow it down, could you?
Yeah, I'll tell you where it came from, is just experimenting with, like, groups of three over the top of a four thing, so.
Ah!
And then just different, like, weird placements of those. I love placing things deliberately in weird places.
Yes.
Because if you just play something, then you tend to place things, like, fills. You know, someone who's listening to you could say, you're doing that in the same place all the time. And you're like, oh, am I? I didn't know that. And I sort of hate to think that I might be doing that.
Right.
So I place things deliberately in places.
Right, yeah. Different places.
So that's how this came about, because it just happens in a couple of different places. So it's that slowed down, and then it's basically that.
And what makes you want to cross? Is it a sonic motivation?
It's probably physical more than sonic, I would say, just because you're with this stuff, you're trying to just make it flow and make it sound contained.
Yeah.
And I think the easiest way that you can sort of, like, get that out, the better. Do you know what I mean? Rather than making it sort of convoluted and linear or something, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Then for this, yeah, it's just kind of like just trying to smooth it over.
And can you talk too about snare treatment? Would you play that once? So I see you've got a splash right on top of the snare.
On here, yeah.
Yeah. Will you play it? Will you give us an example of that groove without the splash, and then put the splash on and show us how much that contributes to the sound?
Well, I only ever use this on the snare, so I'll give you an actual comparison.
Yeah,
otherwise
great.
It'll sound like total nuts. It's. I mean, it just tightens it up.
Yes.
In effect, makes it sound like a bit of a smaller sort of.
Okay, but do it without that. I want to hear, like, why, like, the motivation.
What it sounds like.
Like, show us why this would be bad. Like, if you don't have any treatment on the drum, why are you treating the drum?
Oh, well, I just do all the time because it's just going to sound ringy and not, I mean, we're sort of playing in sort of like hip hop and broken beat.
Hit it.
And let me hear it. Like, I know you don't even want to. It's amazing.
Go on.
Come on. Do it. Ah! Yeah.
See, it's terrible.
Can you play the groove with it, though?
Actually, kind of good.
Is that sonically painful for you? Or just like, ah.
That's okay. I wasn't as bad as
that. Actually, it sounds like a break. Yeah.
Right. But motivated by, like, what? Like 808 snares or you motivated?
Well, drum and bass was all like Amen break snares.
Yeah.
And then pitched up, right? So you take a live drummer, you sample the guy. I mean, GC Coleman, Amen break.
Yeah.
So you sample the guy. Then all the producers with samplers get hold of that break, pitch it up by probably about 3 or 4 semitones, something like that, and then you've got like a quicker
decay. It's going to be shorter.
Yes, so shorter, higher pitched.
Yes.
So that's
the reason for the treatment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you put weight on a snare drummer, you'll
brings the pitch up.
Bring the pitch up. Yeah.
Mega. And what about you, Rob? What's your, in terms of, I know, like, there's a lot going on down here. I was wondering whether we should do it just in a wanna, or whether we should continually, I think we should continually come back to the pedal board throughout this episode.
Yeah.
As slightly, yeah, for Rich, obviously, you know.
Yeah.
But in that track there, well, like, what sounds were you using?
You asked me to bring down my board, and I don't really have a board as such. People keep offering to like make mine all tidy because look at the state. This is how I built my board. But this is my Jacob Collier board, so it was pretty much ready to go. So I just brought it down, and it's really got some other things. It's designed to do some other stuff, really,
right,
that we're not really doing today. To be honest, I would have probably just brought the bass rig and the T16 Octaver, and I could do everything I need to today.
So like amp sound. And then that sub sound in the pedal.
What is the bass rig, like a preamp and a DI?
Yeah, it is, yeah. These just came out pretty recently, and there's two additions. And this black panel one simulates a Fender Bassman.
Got it.
But just it's totally analog.
No modelling
in there, which I just find amazing. So I guess if you open it, it'll just be like a city of capacitors.
Yeah, you know what
I mean? But I think I really love it. For me, working on in-ears a lot, I needed something to like expand the harmonics and generate some tone in the way that a nice old valve amp does. I wouldn't say it sounds exactly like a bassman, but it actually does everything I need, and it's just like you make some careful tweaks with the drive and the blend and stuff, and it's spot on. I love it.
Can you give us a sample of, you know, just bass in isolation, right? That main maybe melody sound that you're playing, and then maybe with the T16 octave, and then also what you were doing with the whammy in that.
I'm going to get one of these. My life is going to be completely
Yeah.
I'm going to go full whammy.
Yeah. Full whammy. That was kind of spontaneous, but I just always remember there's this. Can we talk whammy for a second?
We absolutely can.
So I need to tell you the story about this, basically. My board looked pretty different on the Jacob tour. We did a big old tour this year. And always swapping things out, of course, going into guitar stores around the world and you spot something like, I can use this, I can build it in. And then, unfortunately, I had to stay home for a couple of weeks just with some family problems, basically. And believe it or not, I found a friend who could dep on the Jacob Collier gig. Connor Chaplin, I'm talking about. He's a legend.
Yes.
UK jazz, mostly does jazz stuff, but he stepped in. But on the gig, I play a Fender 6. It'd be nice if I could have brought it down, I guess. But do you know the Fender 6?
Bass 6?
Yeah, the bass 6.
Yeah, dude.
It's a guitar down an octave.
Absolutely.
So in effect, it's a short scale bass with a couple of guitar strings.
You do the full gig on that, yeah?
I do a lot of it, probably 4 or 5 tunes. And so there's a ton of guitar parts. Sometimes Jacob will play bass for the chorus, and then I'll switch to guitar.
That's
and I'll,
cool.
And this—that's when this is the HX is great, because you just switch the presets, go to a guitar amp, simulation. Connor doesn't really play guitar. There's a ton of synth stuff and a ton of guitar parts, and he's more of a bass player. That like the emergency situation was Jacob just got his whammy pedal sent out. It was like just. I thought I'll just write out the guitar parts.
Go up an octave.
In bass clef.
Stick that one.
Yeah, right.
Up an octave.
Sure. Yeah.
Simon got through the gig. They had to do about 5 gigs without me, and he just did that. And,
wicked.
And when I came back, it was on the board. I tied it up a bit and was just playing with it on the gig, just hitting a few things. And I found just some stuff on it that I really love. And one of them, I think this is like the most recent version of this, right? The DT. You can set it to momentarily change the pitch, but my sort of angle on it was it sounds pretty cool if you just like...
It almost sounds like an edit.
Like a glitch, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. And you can alter that up and down, right? So you can do it semitone tone and all that, yeah.
And it sort of has a slide time as well, which you can't edit for some reason, but you can get quite creative with it. I love it.
And do you ever...
And then there's this side, you know, which is
Yeah, I was going to say, do you ever do that, yeah.
Yeah, I try... My thing is how to not try and be mononeon. Do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What else
can you do with it? So, yeah, sometimes I'll do some big swoops with it. I guess it could be really great on some drum and bass stuff, do you know what I mean? To get a full octave kind of... or something.
Right, sure.
But also, like, these settings where you... I quite like... Because it does really well at tracking more than one note at once. So, you know, if I play more than one note at a time and getting it to harmonise it, does some really beautiful stuff. It's fun. There's a lot of stuff.
And could you take us through a little bit of this octave sound, you know, because, Rich, you mentioned, like, when the sub drops in, right? And that's that moment where you're using the Cog T16. Mm-hmm. Can you play that for us a little bit and talk to us about how you're thinking about octave pedal bass?
Yeah. So basically, I mean, my pedal board for 20 years was basically an OC2 and a Moog low-pass filter.
Yeah.
And really, I never found anything that sounds quite as good as that, but it's a bit noisy and, you know, my stuff's getting old. And these guys, Cog Effects in Sheffield, seem to fit both things into something I can put in my pocket.
Amazing.
And it does actually, to me, sounds a lot like the OC2. That funny kind of square wave fuzz on the top.
Yeah.
But it's also got a filter built in, and so you can just sweep it down till you just got...
Oh, so you can just get that. So that sounds great.
And immediately it's that vibe.
Yeah, but that thing of, so only enable the octave down and play an octave up, and you're just sort of synthesizing a sound, you know, effectively.
Right.
And it's,
yeah.
It's kind of a bit of a distorted square wave sound, I guess I'd describe it, but it's perfect, yeah.
And what's the other stuff on the board? There's like a compressor. Do you keep your compressor always on?
I do, actually, for Jacob's thing. Again, it's like within ears, you just need a bit of help sometimes, being able to hear yourself all the time. So it's pretty subtle. You'll see, like, my dry mix is way up higher than the compressed mix, so I'm just dialing a bit in. And this, actually, it's a shame we didn't hook it up, but this is a sidechain opto compressor, and what you can do is send... I could just put a mic in the kick drum and plug it into there, and it'll do the kind of... you know, like, duck the whole signal. It's really good fun. And I haven't seen a lot of hardware units that'll do that,
right,
you know, that go on a pedal board. It sounds great as well.
So essentially building sort of almost like a modular synth rig.
Yeah,
right?
I guess so, kind of, yeah. And then, of course, in the HX, you've got, like, infinite amount of things to add into the loop. So actually, the way I have this set up is quite handy for me to be able to set up a sound while I'm playing. So I might want to get to a section on Jacob's gig where I kick in the octaver and the sidechain compressor in one go, but it's quite hard to do that with my foot. So I'll keep those two in the sidechain of the HX, and I'll just have a preset so that kicks in both of those things at once.
Yes.
And I can be playing, set up another sound for the next bit. And
so routing both those pedals into that effects loop on the side of the HX, and
exactly,
then just using the HX as the controller.
Yeah, just switches a bunch of pedals on and off. That's such a useful feature of the HX.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah. I love this thing, by the way. I never thought I'd say that about a digital effects.
Well, the Hadrian's Storm, they're taking over the world, aren't they? It's like, there's so many people using it.
Like, to release something that was so fully featured and fully realised, and it works, and you can use it as a toolkit. I used it the other day just to mix my bass synth and my bass guitar. No effects, but it's great. Like, you can change whether the inputs are line level or whatever. It's amazing, yeah. Hmm.
Now, hold on right there, my beautiful bass players. I'm interrupting this broadcast to tell you something awesome. But first of all, I just want to say a massive shout out to Rich Spaven and Rob Malarkey for being so awesome. Smash that like button and give these guys some love. They really deserve it. Now, whilst I'm here, just a quick shout to let you know that I'm about to open the Slap Accelerator course for enrollment. We open it once a year, and loads of people ask us what it's like, what are the lessons like, and stuff like that. So I want to give you free access today for one of the lessons, okay? And it's an awesome lesson. It's all about slap. We're talking about hammer-ons and pull-offs and articulations, how to get them into your grooves. And again, this lesson is directly from the Slap Accelerator. You'd usually have to pay like $200 to access this lesson. Today, we are gonna give you it for free. Yay! So what I'll do is I'll make sure the URL is on the screen right here so you know where to go. And we will also put a link down below in the description so you can get it there as well. With that said, here's back to Rob and Rich.
It's super stretchy, isn't it? It's like, if anybody hasn't heard anybody play like that before, they'd be like, where am I feeling it? Where's the one? It's just sort of like, it really feels ambiguous. And obviously that comes from like Jay Dilla and that whole Detroit scene, right? Like, how did you guys get into playing like that? And then we can like go from there.
I mean, for me, it was like hearing that music when I first heard it, I just reacted to it. You know, I was like, what is this? Like, first question, you know, how do I even know that I like it so much? Yeah. Why is my neck moving like this?
Yeah, you know what I mean?
But I've realized later on in trying to learn this stuff that it's like, if it makes you move, then you probably kind of, essentially, you understand it already. You know what I mean?
If you can actually feel it.
Yeah, I mean, imagine that vibe in the studio when they're making this stuff. It's like, that's the vibe.
Yes.
And if that comes across when you're listening to it, then you're kind of in, you know? So it was really that. And then I had a tour with some Detroit artists and I'd bought the records and, you know, I was so into the album. Then I got asked to tour with these guys, with Wajid and Platinum Pied Pipers.
Yeah.
So I was like, right, I now really need to learn this stuff. Which,
what's the first thing you did on the kit to try to get closer to that beat?
To be honest, this is a long time ago and it wasn't on the kit at all.
Really?
I got a pillow and a stick and I played along to it and was just playing the hi-hats so that I could visualize that I was playing the hi-hats on the record as opposed to hearing my own hi-hats conflicting with their hi-hats.
Right.
So it just became like, okay, I'm in. And then once you're in, you got to stay in. And then
you've got in terms of like the placement of where it is, yes, that hi-hat, yes. Yeah,
because it's that sort of flex bend to the feel of it. So it was then about sort of taking ownership of that and then sort of onto the kit with it, and it's like, okay, I get it now.
Yeah,
you know.
And you have talked before about how the quintuplet thing isn't the thing. There are people that break this down.
I don't know. I don't know. Sharon, lift up your hoodie. Real men play quintuplets. And I think that Rich has got like a problem with this. And for context as well, for anybody watching. Yeah, that is the vibe. That's the vibe, man. For anybody watching, there's been a lot of, you know, a lot of talk about quintuplets and how it can, I guess, be that feel can be theorized into quintuplets. Is that a decent kind of like description of what happened?
I think you can, because there's optional amounts of swing that are available to the way we're doing it. For me, it's just about like approaching it in the same way that the producers who made this music approached it, and that was not to sit down and talk about subdivisions, because it's not just quintuplets. It's just, if you're coming from it from that like overly intellectual point of view, which is fine, you could still make music like that and it will be interesting. But if you're talking about Detroit hip hop, then it's like, it's not about, oh, it's a, you know, 30-second triplet or a quintuplet, or well, you're just not coming at it like that.
Yeah.
It's just about feel, and it's actually about something that you can't write down. You can't notate this. It doesn't work. You can't do it. And I think that's great.
And yeah. You've called this wonky time, right? I saw on your Patreon where you guys do like a breakdown where you go straight, swung,
yeah,
and then there's something in between. And the notes even that you put up get blurry. You know, right? The notes actually get blurry, the image of the notes.
We were playing like a straight beat, you know, just like straight eights.
Yes.
And then we were playing like straight swing. Can I
play? Yes,
like
exactly.
straight triplets.
Yep.
And then we were doing like the kind of in between kind of.
The thing is, you know, I guess, or maybe most of us guys coming from an academic background, you know what I mean, and familiar with Western notation and these whole boundaries that imposes on it. Oh, there's your four beats. That's where they go. That one lands on this beat. Now you can divide them off into that. Yeah, I think people making beats on MPCs weren't really coming from there at all, you know. So it's just like, does this feel good, you know?
And depending on where the sample is cut, right?
Yeah.
Depending on how things were were stitched together.
Yeah, but also, I mean, just throughout the history of the world, people have been feeling beats differently, you know, and they just interpret things, and you try and write them down. It's interesting, yeah. I do disagree with the quintuplet thing. There might be a few examples where it kind of fits in, but definitely I don't think that was ever the intention. Mm-hmm. And also, like, if you go back and listen through all those Dilla instrumentals, every single one is completely different. He just approaches it differently. Yeah. Something's pushing, something's pulling, something, you know, something's irregular, something's irregular. It just all helps contribute to this thing, and it's not notatable.
Yes. With that main bass line and that pattern that you're playing, would you guys play three versions of it? What it would sound like if you played it like a funk, like a straight thing, a swung thing, and then what you just played. Could you do that? Or even just straight Dilla.
Yeah, let's just...
We can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh no, see, it's swung. I can't go back to, can't do it. So straight, yeah, it's going to be really straight.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Ha ha ha.
Although, it's trying to make you sound good as well, so we're not just being dicks about it.
Yeah, but, no. Right, of course. Well, and I mean, the straight thing, it's not bad. It's just a different thing.
Yeah, totally different. Yeah, exactly, of course. Yeah.
We also got into, because we did a whole Patreon, we laid it out with this. Because we're talking about this as like a sort of internal clock, you know, of just like understanding. But then also, it's like Rob says, like, producers like Dilla coming at each track in a different way. It also sounds ridiculous if like the drums are swinging and the bass is like super straight. And it's actually like the offset, which can be really interesting, or the other way around, straight drums, swingy bass, mm-hmm. or whatever, or, you know, or early snares and all sorts of different like connotations for this, which really like stretches the drummer bass player relationship, I think.
Yeah.
Because my question was going to be based on that, actually, because like, let's say something like you take something straight, you've got four beats in the bar, right? This is the drums, this is the bass. And you're like kind of matching up like this, aren't you? And like, you know, one of you might play a little behind, but it's kind of like everything's sort of like within the grid.
Yeah.
So, and that's an agreed, it's a silent agreement, hopefully, that everything is on that grid.
Right.
Whereas when you are, both of you are sort of like contorting the grid somewhat, that just in the nature of what you're doing is not going to line up. Yeah. There's always going to be flams, right? Because what you're playing...
Yeah, it shouldn't line up. Yeah. It's best if it doesn't. Yeah, you're right. Like, if you're coming from a whole, you know, if you like disco bands or something, it'd always be like the kick and the bass, they'd do the same thing.
Yeah.
It's like they add up to make this cool sound at the bottom, you know. And I mean, for me, really, it was... we have to talk about Voodoo. Just hearing D'Angelo's Voodoo was really the defining moment for me. On that record, there's the whole range of like where you can put things, and it's such a great example. Yeah.
When you're playing, do you ever feel like, how far can you stretch it in terms of what we were just talking about? Like then, like obviously.
Well, you can nearly end up back on the beat again because you can stretch it back so far. I mean, as an example of this, of what you're talking about, right? If you take like some 16th notes and swing them, so, and then you swing that. So those 16ths on the kick are getting pushed further and further back. So you can just keep pushing
and then it
back
ends.
and you end up nearly playing four, you know.
Yeah.
So it's they can be a different.
I don't know why when most drummers try and do that, it doesn't sound like that.
Well, and Voodoo, with Voodoo too, the is the thing. The syncopation is the thing that feels so close to the downbeat.
Right.
And even in Pino's playing.
Yeah, a lot of this.
You know, one and up.
There was a lot of how close could you get them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, where does this note actually belong?
Right.
Yeah. Is it a syncopation or is it on the beat?
Yeah. It's so close. Yeah, it's right next to the next downbeat. Could you talk a little bit about what is changing when you go from straight to like your interpretation of Dilla? Are kick and snare staying kind of like grid? Because there has to be some consistency, right?
What's sort of like, where's the downbeat almost? Where's the anchor point within that groove?
I mean, it's like the pulse hasn't changed, so that's the anchor point. I think probably the on beats haven't changed, unless your two and four is going to be early or late or something like that. So probably the on beats, the bits that are in, that are still
on the strong beats,
on the original place, in their original position, like on the grid, is probably this amount of it, but then you're adding in the and you can do whatever you want with the kick and pull it all over the place.
I was going to say the kick's all over the place, isn't it? Yeah.
In this example, yes.
Yeah, Rich, your kick's all over the place.
I know, yeah. Isn't it?
Rich, when you play like Dilla time and you're playing with a click, are you trying to adhere to the click in a different way than if you're playing straight funk?
Kind of yes and no. It's difficult one, that because the responsibility of playing to the click is the same, and your focus on the click is the same.
Yeah,
I think you have a more sort of languid, you have more space around it, and you could probably disrespect it a bit more than in a straight thing where you just want it just to tick and in a consistent way. But I think just because this stuff is swung, it doesn't mean that there's inconsistency to it. I think for it to work, it needs to be consistent, like a hip hop beat needs to be consistent, you know. So
yes,
so it does still require quite a lot of attention to, you know, micro placement with the click.
Could we hear a little of that? Could we get a little bit of click in playback and listen to you guys play to a click and just hear what the click is the constant, right? The click is never changing.
Yeah.
Like how you guys would play around that, because you were hearing a click in your ears, but the audience, right? We weren't hearing it.
Yeah, we're not hearing that. Yeah, yeah.
But it would be so interesting to do a bit where we could actually hear what's happening and how you're interpreting the click. Mm. If you're used to playing with the click, how do you think about playing it in Dilla time?
Sure.
All right, yeah. Cool. There were moments there that were that the click, I thought
it disappeared.
I thought, oh, did Sharon stop the click, right? So it's wild because the click was dropped. You were dropping your strong beats, like you said, and like I imagined you would, right on top of that click. But then it's the things around, it's the syncopations that get the treatment.
Yes.
And
treatment. I love that.
Well, right.
They get the
treatment. It's the treatment. Yeah, it's a different treatment. Playing a straight groove. Yeah. I feel like sometimes I hear people thinking that the Dilla thing in their playing is just slowing down, right? Or just like, oh, we're going to pull everything back. But that's not the case.
No.
Well,
that would be my number one advice to drummers trying to play this stuff. It should, that's the opposite of what you should do. Yeah, that's when it doesn't work.
Right.
Like I've played with a lot of younger guys having a go at doing this, and they're like, "Oh, it should feel like it's going backwards, right?" No, the one thing that I need to pull back against is the most driving snare you've ever heard.
Yes, you know what I mean? Because it only works when that's on, when those strong beats are on, so that then you can.
If everyone drags, then
the whole thing's slower.
Backwards. Well,
no, it's not slower. It's the same tempo. It's just you'll only hear like a tiny little. It's just gone, and then it's not going to sound any different whatsoever.
Right, because if everybody just moves back,
the relative, then it's the same tempo. Exactly
the same. Yeah. And could you talk to a bit, Rob, about like how you are playing the bass to a groove like this? Like, is there something that you're thinking about? Is there an approach that you take?
I mean, that example, which is it's a track we used to play with Ty, an MC, like a London MC that we toured with a lot, who's sadly no longer with us. But this was like a big tune. It used to kick off when we played it. But it's that thing of just having an identity to the track, you know. And in this case, it was like the really snappy kick drum. And the bass is basically straight, but it's late as hell.
Oh,
so
yes.
It's behind the beat. And I'm just playing. There's a little bit of shuffle to it, but the main thing is it's just all later
it's way
in time.
Back,
and that's just propelling it forward, and that's why it works. And tonally, it makes a difference having a subby sound as well, because it seems to disassociate itself tonally from the drums a little bit, so you don't mind. This is my perception of it. You don't mind hearing it kind of displaced, you know.
Right.
Mm. If I had like a super bright bass sound, it might be like, oh,
or with a really harsh attack on it.
Yeah, exactly.
It would sound like it's conflicting,
almost like hearing somebody's trunk rattle as it goes by, right? Or like a club in the distance.
I'd be happy with that sound.
That's
my sound.
Could you guys demonstrate that with just like kick, snare, and the bass line? Just to hear, like to isolate your syncopation against the strong beats?
It'll sound pretty funny, actually. But.
Yeah, because I think what we're saying is like we're on sort of like different clocks on this. Like our subdivisions are different.
Yes.
And I think when you're in that situation, it's good to understand each other's. And then also just to sort of like trust beyond that. Because like when it really gets locked in, which, you know, we've played on some real big systems with Ty, and like you say, it's really kicked off playing this tune.
Mm.
And when you get it in there, it's like, it just feels amazing, because it's like you realize that there's more to music than just like the straightforward, like, yes, we must be at least on the same
time
signature, subdivision, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Yes.
I love that.
So cool.
It took a lot of work to get that consistentness.
Yes.
I think I can move it by varying amounts, but you just, yeah, the other stuff really helps. To
how did you work on that? How did you work on actually being able to move that?
I guess mostly on the job, but just to be honest, I'm always just conscious of it. Hmm. Actually, yeah. 100% of the time, I'm very conscious of my placement and like where could I put this next time around to make it feel even better.
Yeah.
You
know, yeah. So.
And in that example, I really hear what you're saying about, like, if that weren't consistent, if the strong beats weren't consistent, this wouldn't work.
No, not at all.
Right?
No.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, it's fun. It's so fun to be able to peel back the layers. It's like like you being able to do that is almost like having a mute on like the hi-hat group on a DAW. You know what I mean? Just to like hear how the bass syncopation is interacting with the strong beats.
Yeah, it's interesting, It makes it more difficult that because you want all that stuff to just be bobbing along and then I'm doing this strange thing pulling against it. When you strip it back, it's like, oh, yeah, that is pretty weird.
So cool.
It sounds wicked, man. Like something I've also seen you do, Rob, as well, is that you use a lot of the E and the A, and like some people watching might be thinking, why is he not going down to the D and the G, you know, when you're sort of like playing around? And obviously, just talk a little bit about that, because I think it's obviously a tonal consideration for you. And not just in that track, I think.
It's not something I've ever really thought of, but... Yeah. I don't know, I mean...
You're favouring that thicker tone of the E and the A, and that's why you're not specifically playing over.
I tend to be up the neck. Like, I'd rather play a B flat there, to be honest.
Yeah.
Than there, because you get that. It starts getting a bit.
Yeah.
Which is cool for some things, you know, if I want a tighter sound, then I guess I'd play there, but usually I'm after a warmer.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're doing a bunch of like left hand mute in there as well, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just can control the length of the string by how much.
Yeah.
How much I use the soft bits there, yeah. So funny, like I spent years working on my technique and now I basically play with one finger.
Yeah. And you use a bunch of vibrato as well when you're doing the lines as well, don't you? Yeah.
Yeah. Trying to get that real sine wave synth sound. Again,
yeah, it's a real key part of the sound.
You know,
yeah.
Not going for B.B. King so much. But.
Right. But like the oscillators rubbing against one another.
It'd be great if you could make it go below pitch as well. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
But I guess I haven't found a way of doing that yet.
Into the night. my lucid dream. Take this life, my sinner, I am myself, and so it's yours. Take it as you would, my source divine, my symmetry.
We should just talk about the click at the end when as it gets faster, it's hilarious. Like the click track's hilarious. Yeah.
What happens to the click as it gets faster?
It just feels funny. It just keeps going. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Boom. That's such a fun moment because there's a modulation, so it's getting higher, right, and faster. There's this. We're like, oh, where are we going? And there's this feeling, right?
It's a Jordan Rakai track. This called Toko, right? So, just to fill in the blanks of when we wrote this, it was just funny, and I think it's a good reminder even to myself. We got to the end and it was like, I've got an idea, but then it was sort of already dismissed it because it was sort of ridiculous. It was a ridiculous idea, you know.
Yeah,
I remember we sort of looked at each other with a bit of mischief in it, and was like, yeah, why don't we just do it? Yeah. You know, and I'm glad we did, and you know, we basically just like put the click, so it just suddenly on the one, it's just faster.
Yes.
And then it goes around four times and it's just faster. And of course to play that is ridiculous.
It's actually insanely difficult to play on the bass. It's really, because it starts off there in E. And you got the, I mean, if you can think of a better way to do this. At least you've got an open E.
Yeah.
Next time you don't have the open E anymore. So you go. Honestly, I can't think of a better
looked
way
mental,
to play it.
Like, yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. Oh wow!
It's like a dare gone wrong.
Really hard.
Yeah.
It probably was great on the roads. Really easy to play.
Yeah.
When you guys are playing like odd time stuff like that, my assumption is that you're not counting it and you're feeling it in sort of like larger groupings of time. Can you talk about that for a bit?
Yeah. No numbers, basically.
No numbers.
Really.
Absolutely not. No. I mean, that's my whole thing. I'm always, it's my rant really about, like, I feel like if something is complicated in terms of numbers, then as a drummer, as a musician, it's like, it's for us to just absorb all of that. And then when it, you know, when it comes out, it's just music. I don't feel like you want to watch me counting, you know.
Right.
So I think for me, it's just like, it's about absorbing it. You know, with making this track with Jordan, it was about sort of like, I don't know, something your mum could listen to or something, like something you could dance. I mean, I've seen people dance to this.
Rob didn't look convinced, I'm just pointing it out. But he didn't look convinced.
What I mean is this, you're not presenting it in a way that's like, that's emphasizing it being in a weird time signature or anything like that. There's nothing over the top about, or signposting the fact that it's difficult to play.
It doesn't have that wink of it's an odd time signature. Right.
Yeah.
So it's sort of trying to just sort of execute it in a way that's like still kind of slick and cool, and like, I like this tune. It's still got a soulful vibe to it, but you know, without doing that, basically. So it's
again, I think it's just, it gives it an identity, doesn't it? Because there's nothing that sounds like that.
Yes.
The way that it lilts and like all the combination of all the elements is just. Yeah. I mean, the thing about the numbers is they're essential. You know, if when you're learning it and you're working it out, of course you need to understand where it's coming from.
So yeah.
Not like saying never use numbers. Right. They're like the basis of rhythm, aren't they? You know, they're really, yeah. But I'm a fan of numbers. But there's the point is, you know, when you're in it, it's nice to think of it in a larger scale. I have this thing where I sort of think of each bar as being an amount of time long, you know, that I can feel.
Yeah.
So it's almost like you're feeling a longer pulse. You know, I know that the bar's about 1.2 seconds long, and every time it comes around, it feels like the right place land on the front again.
So instead of, so like, one, two, three, you're thinking that, like...
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And then it's a longer one. Yeah,
exactly, yeah. So you could think sort of like, how many threes are there? It's 4 threes, so one...
It's three bars of six. Four, then it's a bar of three, and then it's
three
a bar
bars
four.
Of six. One. See, can you clap that for her then?
What?
Which is
one, two, three, four, five, six. Two, two, three, four, five, six. Yeah. Three, two, three, four, five, six. One, two, three, one, two, three, four. One. That's the top.
Yeah. Got it. Yeah. So you could say three sixes and a seven. So yeah, like one of them's a little bit longer, but yeah, I can sort of work with that.
Yeah, and you're just feeling the downbeats, is it like the ones almost?
Yeah, sort of trying to big simplify sort of it.
Yeah.
And then I can concentrate on other stuff.
So you're not feeling like metric time, you're feeling actual time.
Yeah.
the length of time passing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is kind of what normal feeling your pulses are just on a different scale, isn't it?
Yeah, we're not all counting to four, right, in standard grooves. We're
When you play your semi-quaver, you know how to make them equally spaced. Yes. You know, it's just on a slightly different scale.
Well, thank you all for that. For that breakdown, because, you know, I'm over here going, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, and they're trying to get into that 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, right? I mean, is there some level of needing to do that in the beginning before you actually can just feel it?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Definitely, yeah.
Well, I was really relieved then when it went into the section of four, but then you couldn't let it stay, right? then it kept getting faster, right? So great. I mean, the difference between those two things is really cool. Can you talk to us a little bit about how you're approaching this bass line? And I mean, I know you played that moment at the end, but in the beginning, are you using anything on the board for this, or is it just straight up hands?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. In a way, I would have liked to have a precision or something for this, but I think of it as just actually synth bass on the record, isn't it? But we played this live a lot, and I guess I just wanted to. Just works really nice, muted. And
are you doing anything on a jazz bass to get that P bass vibe?
Yeah, just rolling this pickup back a little bit.
Yes.
Like 30% back or something. To be honest, from that point, I never noticed a lot of difference to you. Like,
it's in that first 10% kind of, right?
Yeah, so you back it off, then it's a bit more precision-y. And I just want to be quite insistent with it. I think if I depart too much from it, apart from it getting a bit difficult,
yes,
if I do, it kind of loses the rolling thing. So,
right.
Yeah, I'm just trying to keep it pretty simple.
And then are you turning your tone knob back as well?
So it's actually, it's on, I'm going to say, 40% tone. Okay. 100% sounds like this. And zero.
Got it, yeah, tone. Yeah.
I might sometimes play that with my thumb as well.
Have you got flats on it?
No.
They're rounds, yeah.
They're actually pretty bright. Rounds, yeah.
You're just controlling the level of brightness with the tone control and sometimes
and
with the
muting,
hand.
Yeah. And I think this really helps as well. I mean, it's pretty subtle, but if I take the bass rig off, it definitely sounds more like a DI'd bass with some of the. And then this just sort of thickens it up.
Yes.
Sounds good. You were playing fifths there. Like I've noticed when I watch you play, you play a lot of double stops, right?
Yeah.
Can you talk about that for a minute? Because I think that you use them so much in your bass lines that I think it'd be a, it'd be an own goal if we don't get you to talk about it.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, I've done a little video on this with my own Patreon thing. But just, I think a lot of bassists think when they think of double stops, they either do that,
yeah,
or you know the old,
yeah, the flat fives,
stuff, you know,
yeah.
And I just wanted to open that out a bit and think, well, it doesn't have to be that at all. I quite like doing the thing with. If you put a bit of vibrato on with a fifth, it just sounds like, again, trying to get them to move the same amount. Sounds quite synthy. Or I might do, like, seconds are really nice sometimes. You know, and sometimes thinking about two parts moving independently is a good approach to this as well. Instead of, so you're just imagining two melodies instead of just thinking, oh, I'm making an interval.
Yeah. Third. I notice too when you're playing those fifths, especially kind of maybe up high rooting on the E string or down low rooting on the A string, it sounds lower. It almost gives you this feeling of like an octave pedal on or something. There's like a low, like when you play a D and an A together.
Yeah.
It's like. Yeah. That sounds almost like there's a low D in the mix.
Yeah, it's like there's a pressure.
Yeah.
Being contributed to the mix.
Yeah, it's a really fun thing that you can do that doesn't require the board, right? Just with hands.
And also where you pick that can make a really big difference. So if doing that would really fill out the mix too much and make it too muddy, you can always like... You pick that and all that mud goes away, actually. So you can control the amount of mud in your...
It's like a filter.
...your double stops. That's fine, right?
Yeah.
That's too much.
Right.
That's fine.
Ladies and gentlemen, please stay seated as we prepare for the... String Change Challenge.
Okay, Rich and Rob, are you ready for the bass string challenge?
Yep.
You've got to put a brand new set of strings that are still in the pack on this bass. You are under the gun with the clock. We're going to be counting you down. You got to do it as fast as you possibly can. Now look, these strings have to be on the bass. They don't have to be up to pitch, but they have to have some tension. We got to get a set of strings on this bass.
I'm going for a sheer time, right? I might not even use these.
Oh, well, listen. The technique is up to you. We've seen you function so well together as a rhythm section. Now we're going to have to see
one about string changing
as a tech duo.
However long this takes, it will be the quickest that I've ever strung a bass.
You're winning before you start. Yeah.
In addition to this, we're going to try to distract you with trivia. Are you ready?
Yep.
Sharon, calm down.
go on, go. So, 3, 2, 1, go.
And they're off.
Go on.
And they're off.
Shall I look up the answers to their questions?
Do that. Open it.
You two are a formidable bass and drums duo. Name two bands comprised of just bass and drums.
Two bands.
Bands.
Just the Black Stripes.
Well, that would be a guitar and drums.
Oh, shit. Okay, Rich, we've got to read the chart. There's a chart for what colour goes where.
But he threw the chart over there!
Don't tell me that.
Don't get the chart. Bass and drums.
Here's the chart.
Why do you need a chart?
Help me. Bass and drums. The bands that are bass and drums.
There sure are.
Just bass and drums.
I'm struggling.
I got one.
Yeah. Oh man, it's not coming to
We're going
to
move on. I would have accepted Royal Blood.
Royal Blood.
Death from Above 1979. Lightning Bolt. There are many others. According to the Beastie Boys, you guys, you will be incredibly sleep deprived until you reach this East Coast American city.
Rich?
No sleep till.
Oh.
Cincinnati? Nice link to Wyoming.
Is it Brooklyn?
It is Brooklyn. Well done, well done. Fellas.
Yeah.
PB&J or beans and toast? Beans on toast.
I mean, I know what I'm going to say. He's such an Englishman.
What?
You are.
Was that a question?
Yeah. Yes.
Beans on toast or PB&J?
Oh, beans on toast.
Okay.
I'll go with him for this occasion.
Beans on toast.
Yeah, yeah.
You're both incorrect. PB&J is so delicious. It's so delicious. Don't let me distract you guys. You're doing well. Keep going.
The gradation on this is absolutely the slowest one I've ever used.
Ian, how many strings we got on?
How many strings do we have on? Right now, currently, we have one string.
Look at the chart.
Thread them, Rich. Thread them.
Should I be finding this therapeutic? What's the next question?
The next question. True or false?
First green.
Rob's signature Wilcock bass was named the Malarkey due to his wife wanting to retain her maiden name.
Well,
is that for me?
Yeah.
I love that so much.
Oh man, I forgot about that. It's true.
The modern electric bass was invented in what year?
You're asking me? Seriously?
I'm asking you. care to take a swing at it?
1952.
So close. So close, Rich.
I'm guessing that. 50, second is black, by the way.
Thanks.
Hurry up, Rob.
Yeah. It's incredibly difficult.
It's 1940. That's a bad time.
I was incredibly close. With 52.
What did you say? 52?
Yeah.
1950.
Go in the middle.
51.
Correct. There we go. Correct. We've got it.
See, I gave it to him. That's what a good team we are.
Yeah.
Detroit, Michigan, famous for producer Jay Dilla, was also famous for Motown Records, where Studio A was called the Snake Pit. Why on earth was it called the Snake Pit?
This is so embarrassing. I should know. Snake Pit? I don't know. Was it like...
Do we need the chart anymore?
Sort of.
Dump the chart.
We're done with it.
Yeah. We don't need the chart. Was it just like a terrifying hire and fire situation?
That's what I thought, too. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
But actually, it was because they used to hang microphones from the ceiling. And when they would take the mics off, the wires would continue to hang, look like snakes.
Oh.
What time are you on, Sharon?
We are on 4:05.
When a young Stevie Wonder used to record in Detroit at Motown Records, what was his favorite choice from the candy vending machine?
Wow.
I'm going to give it to you. Baby Ruth.
Okay.
Baby Ruth.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
On the classic album Voodoo, D'Angelo told Questlove he wanted his drums to sound like they were A, jazzy, B, funky, or C, drunk.
Drunk.
Ah! Hey, and with that, we have four strings on a bass.
Smashed it.
We have them roughly in tune.
Yeah.
Sharon, what's the time?
4:34.
Smashed it.
Yeah.
Top of the leaderboard, Rich. Like you did, Rob tried that, but I think it was down to Rich.
But you didn't tell me how to help. I actually had like a Formula One drill over here just to go zzz, 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 but you didn't tell me.
Did everyone
else
make the chart and put them on the right strings?
Mate, we've had them in the wrong order and everything. I think that, yeah, you know that.
Yeah.
But I loved that you were concerned about that. Amazing. Getting them on the right way? Yes. Round of applause. Well done, guys.
Ladies and gents, quick shout. Rich Spaven, Rob Malarkey, where can they find you guys if they want to come and harass you online? I know you've both got Patreons and websites and all those shenanigans.
My Patreon's a good place to do that.
Is it a good place to do that? Yeah. Go give Rich money. Rob, take pounds and dollars?
Definitely.
And love. We take, like, money and love on there, yeah.
Money and love. Yeah. And thanks to Ian Allison, Sharon Reynolds, Lydia Reynolds, all everybody behind, Dan, and massive shout-out to Nathan of Fiction Studios here. Take it easy. We'll see you in a bit. Bye.